If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. Welcome. The number here is 914-803-4522. We're going to talk tonight, when I say we, hopefully my co-host Steve Clark will be joining me at some point in the show. Otherwise, I will be talking about Hillary Clinton and some of the things that I think her candidacy represents, or at least things that we ought to be looking at as conscientious voters. I heard over the weekend, this past weekend, Hillary Clinton spoke to a women's group. I'm not quite sure that I recall which women's group she spoke to, but as part of her presentation, she said that we will need to change going forward. She said we will need to change our deeply held religious beliefs. And when I heard her say that, My antenna went up because, number one, I thought of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama during his presidential run, both talking about Barack knows we're going to have to rewrite our history, to redefine our culture. And that felt really wrong. But it feels even more wrong now, in hindsight, for Hillary Clinton to be saying that we need to change our deeply held religious beliefs. It is true that Barack Obama has helped us transform the United States into something other than it was before his presidency. And the thought that a politician could totally ignore the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, both of which were founded upon and specifically state, at least the Constitution does, in the Bill of Rights, that in the First Amendment, that it is separation of church and state upon which this nation was founded. And so for a politician to be talking about deeply held religious beliefs and the need to change them, to me, is deeply disturbing. It flies in the face of what this country is supposedly all about. It flies in the face of the intention of the founding fathers and the founding mothers of this country. And it takes us one step further away from what the United States used to look like. And when I say that, here's what I mean. We now pretty much have an oligarchy. We pretty much have an elite, empowered, rich class of people that run this country. And the average voter has very little sway over what happens. If you actually elect a politician who tells you that one of their political intentions is to change deeply held religious beliefs, we will quickly move from an oligarchy to a despotic or a tyrannic situation where you will have people who, well, I don't care whether you're Catholic or Jewish or Muslim, or I don't care if you're a Scientologist, no one should be able to tell you, and certainly not government, what it is you should believe in or what your deeply held religious belief is, no matter how offensive that belief is to them. As long as you're not hurting anyone with your religious belief, you're allowed to believe whatever you want. And neither your next-door neighbor nor the President of the United States nor any elected official should be crossing the boundary of church and state and making determinations about what you're allowed to believe religiously. I know there's much more to what's happening and unfolding in Hillary's campaign, but for the moment, let's welcome Steve Clark to the show, my co-host, and let Steve jump in here. Steve, before we get to the whole nuclear issue with the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation, why don't you at least jump in here on this issue of church, state, and Hillary's comment over the weekend that part of her intention of her campaign, of her presidency, is to change deeply held religious beliefs.
I think it's a pretty prescient statement that she's making. And if you think about it in the context of what's happening right now, I think there is a big movement to do that. I think if you look at the two, I would say the two most recent examples, the first one being the case about the pizza company, not wanting to or willing to cater a gay wedding, and the owner's decision not to want to do that. The fact is that the owner, on his behalf, wanted to serve people that were gay. He had no problem with that. But to celebrate a function, to celebrate a gay marriage, was something that he felt crossed his religious beliefs. It's one thing to serve food to somebody and help them and run a business and have them pay. But celebrating a wedding is a different context and a different meaning in terms of your participation as a business owner and what that meant. Immediately, the business owner was attacked as being, I don't even know what the right word is, homophobic. And the reality, that's not what he was. He was just, he wanted to live his life in the context of his religion. The second thing that I think that's happening right now is take a look at the case that we're going on right now with the subject of gay marriage. That's another example of what I would call Hillary's statement is what she's trying to do is change the culture of what people believe in or change their religious beliefs. I think, what I would say that we've had the conversation offline is that it's amazing that how far as a country that we've fallen that now, the politicians feel so brazen that they can make a statement like that. And there really is no uproar by the religious community anymore. The people have become so docile, and they know that in some ways there's really it's a very hard fight to fight the government. And with this push, I believe if the justices accept gay marriage, and let's call it what it is, it's a redefinition of a word more than anything else. I think we're really going to be sliding towards a slippery slope. So those are my thoughts, and I don't know if you want to add to anything that I said there, Carol.
I would, Steve. You remind me. Let's update our listeners. You spoke of the pizza incident, the pizza parlor that didn't want to cater a gay wedding. Let me update our listeners on the bakery. If you remember, there was a bakery that didn't want to make a cake for a gay wedding. They wound up with tremendous hate mail and protesting, and it shut down their business. They actually had to close the bakery. And the intention of the father when he opened the bakery was to pass it on to his children and his grandchildren. That never was going to materialize because they were actually put out of business. But the update is that gay couple sued the baker and his wife, sued the people who owned the bakery, and a decision has come down that they owe the gay couple $138,000 for the pain and suffering that the gay couple went through when they couldn't get their cake made by that particular baker. Now, let me tell you that some of the pain and suffering that the gay couple alleged in their complaint was that they became depressed, they lost their appetite, they were sleeping more than normal out of depression, they felt ostracized. If it weren't so serious what's happening along this issue and through our court system, it's absolutely laughable. You have people who are in legitimate automobile accidents who are severely injured and don't get adequately compensated in many cases for not only the pain and suffering, but the loss of limbs or sometimes the loss of life. The awards can be, in some cases, inadequate. And yet you get a gay couple who could have had that cake made anywhere else compensated to the tune of $138,000 because they got depressed, because they lost their appetite, because they slept more. I mean, it's comedic, except it's tragic. And the real tragedy, Steve, is that we don't take more offense and raise more voices. You know, it concerns me, Steve, that so much of our country is still what I consider to be asleep at the wheel in terms of what our obligation is as a citizen to stand up and speak about these things, to do something in our local communities. And I actually personally feel remiss myself lately, and I'm beginning to ask myself, where do I jump in locally? Because I think what most people are missing, because they're sidetracked. They're sidetracked by the Jesse Jacksons. They're sidetracked by the Al Sharptons. They're sidetracked by the Rosie O'Donnells. Whether the issue is racism or sexism, whatever the issue is, we get sidetracked. And they pit us against one another as Democrat against Republican, black against white, rich against poor. And I am quite frankly, Steve, I remain astonished that most people don't understand that that's not what the division is. It happens to be a progressive agenda. And we really can't beat this drum enough, because there are progressives in the Republican Party, in the Democrat Party. There are Jewish progressives, there are Christian progressives, there are Catholic progressives, there are gay progressives, and there are black progressives. They are everywhere. It's not a matter of any one of those individual categories like race or gender or economic status. It's that progressives have an agenda that is very socialistic, that is very spread the wealth, that is very more government makes better solutions. The bigger the government, the better the solution. It's never worked historically anywhere else in the world throughout history. It certainly didn't work, you know, it was Stalin, Lenin. Socialism doesn't work. It didn't work in Israel. Israel started out as a socialist country, and in some ways it still is. But it's reigning democratic principles in its politics and in its economy are unfettered capitalism and still, you know, a democratic vote. Israel started out as all socialist small communities, but it doesn't work. Socialism doesn't work. The bigger you get, the less effective it is, and ultimately you get a ruling class, and everyone else becomes the servant of the ruling class. And so I wish more people understood that what the real enemy out there is progressivism. Hillary Clinton, when she ran for president in 2008, said, "I am a early 20th century progressive." She was not shy about labeling herself who she really is. How many people, Steve, know that early progressives were eugenicists? That the founder of Planned Parenthood was a progressive eugenicist? That was the intention, was to eliminate the black race through abortion. Yet today we have Planned Parenthood as this waving banner of women's support and this wonderful organization that supports women, when in fact it has performed the majority of the abortions that have been the 50 million since Roe v. Wade. And it's really who gets devastated the most? It's the black community, because they're the majority of people receiving abortions. So I know I went off on a tangent here, and I want to talk about the nuclear issue, and I want to talk about the Clinton Foundation, but I want our listeners, Steve, to be really aware that what they need to know and what they need to educate themselves about is progressivism, not Democrat or Republican, gay or straight, black or white. So why don't you fill us in a little bit, Steve, on this issue of how we promoted tonight's show, which was that back in the 50s, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg were executed for selling nuclear secrets to the Russians, and now the latest and greatest as part of this unfolding Hillary Clinton / Bill Clinton / Clinton Foundation scandal turns us to looking at this issue once again, because apparently we're providing the Russians with nuclear components once again.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I wish I could have thought the analogy Michael Savage, the radio host, I thought labeled was a brilliant analogy. That if you look back in the history of the United States, nuclear secrets were seen as vital, and the technology that we developed had real promise and had also a real potential for damage in the world. And so those secrets should be guarded as safely as possible. And if you think about it, the case with the Rosenbergs were, the husband worked as a worked at a nuclear plant, and he sold the nuclear secrets to the Russians. It was, you know, if you read the history, it was a really huge case because as you know, the leftists and the progressives really came out and said it was a witch hunt. It was during the time of the McCarthy hearings, and really there was a huge amount of slander directed his way for what they thought he did. But in the end, the Russians in the 1990s, they released the files, which is, again, I always mispronounce the Verona files, the Venona files. They came out and they confirmed that the Rosenbergs were spies and that, yes, they were supplying the Russians with nuclear secrets. For doing so, they were executed. And the interesting thing, or however you want to claim it to be, look at the parallels. The Clintons, through their foundation, received monies through different financiers to gain access to Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton was actually paid $500,000 to give a speech in Russia. The same financier who in the end was able to get the rights to acquire uranium out of the mines out of Utah. That uranium is now going to be supplied to the Russians, and now it's now their rights. And if you think about it, the parallels are exactly the same. It's the main component of developing a nuclear bomb is uranium. And so in one case, you had the Rosenbergs selling secrets. In this case, the Clintons are actually selling their uranium to the Russians to make nuclear bombs. And the interesting stories that I've been reading today about it that has a lot of people concerned is that clearly Russia has alliances with Iran, and there is a feeling and there's a fear that the Russians will supply the Iranians with the base material of uranium to make the nuclear bombs that Iran wants, and which they said in numerous cases that Iran wants the bomb, or let's say better, Iran wants to wipe off Israel off the face of the earth. So if that's not treason, if that doesn't rise to the level of treason, I don't know what does. I think it's the more disturbing thing on top of all this is that essentially the Clintons have proclaimed themselves to be public servants, and really they're not public servants. They're people who use the political powers of government to enrich themselves at the expense of the Americans, and no price and no amount of money is too great for a sacrifice for their wealth at the expense of Americans.
I do think, you know, that you're right. I do think there is a grave concern, because I think that probably in the end game, Russia is probably playing Iran, and Iran is probably playing Russia, because neither one of them have any integrity or principles that Westerners can understand. However, in the moment, they can align for certain reasons. I mean, Russia has no love of Israel either, and Iran needs that uranium, and I agree that Iran may actually be at the table because they may have a back deal. They may be at a table with us, and they may be seemingly interested in cutting some kind of a deal for limiting what they can do in terms of developing the components and the essential parts for a nuclear weapon. However, they probably have a back deal with Russia, which is why they're even at the table. And the irony is that while we are fighting the Russians and the Iranians in Yemen, because it's Russian financing that is financing the Iranian incursion through rebels in Yemen that drove out the president of Yemen and that has taken over the government in Yemen, while we are fighting them there, we are sitting at a table with them. President Obama is sitting at a table with Iran, and Bill Clinton is giving speeches with Russia, getting himself $500,000 for a one-hour speech, and selling uranium to the Russians. So we, in some ways, and I hate to say this, but in some ways, we look like the head of the snake to me. That we look like, and I'm not a basher of the United States. I'm very proud to be an American, and I think we are the greatest experiment in human freedom that has ever existed on the planet. But I also think that we have lost our way, And if we continue to elect people like the Clintons, like the Bushes, because I'm not partial Republican or Democrat, I dislike both of them equally. It's a toss-up who I dislike more. If we continue to elect people who have gotten into bed, clearly the Bushes with the Saudis, clearly the Clintons with the Russians and the Chinese, if we continue to elect people, and God forbid this next election comes down to Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, then we are nailing our own coffin shut because we know the alliances, these backdoor, illegal, unethical, unprincipled alliances that these families have made with foreign governments. You know, I will tell you a personal, ironic story. My daughter, who serves in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, is home for a month on leave. And she talked to me about she's interested in foreign service when she gets out. So she said, I'm going to make some calls while I'm home. She called a professor at the University of Texas who's a former consulate representative for the United States, and she called a person who's a mutual friend of someone. We have a mutual friend, and he is also an ex-Foreign Service officer, and they both told her the same thing. They said to her, as admirable as your service is right now, you can't serve in the United States Foreign Service if you've ever been in a foreign army. And if you hold dual citizenship, which she does, you'd have to give up your foreign citizenship in order to serve. So, okay, let's say she has to give up her foreign citizenship, and let's say she was willing to do that, which she's not, but let's say hypothetically that she was. She still couldn't serve in any foreign service capacity. You're talking about consulates, embassy, the State Department. She couldn't serve her country because she fought in the army of an ally. Now, look how scrupulous that limitation is, and yet you can have an ex-president cutting shameful deals with our sworn enemies to put $500,000 in his own pocket. Isn't that just too ironic?
You know, it doesn't surprise me because at the lower levels, that's really where the rubber hits the road. It's a topic that you and I have talked about at length, that if you look at the lower levels of the criminal justice system or the laws and the rules and the regulations, there's one set of rules and laws for the general public. And once you get to the very high levels of finance, business, entertainment, whatever you want to call it, there's a whole other set of rules and laws that apply. And for those people, there are no rules and laws. It's whatever you can get away with and whatever you can get away with a willing press. So that does not surprise me at all. I would say it's par for the course, and it's part of what I would call the breakdown of our society, that we now live in a society that we have really two sets of laws for two separate sets of people. It's part of the continued, I'd say, deterioration of our society that we're willing to accept, just that point that you made there. We have one set of rules for your daughter and one set of rules for the Clintons.
And if we finish out or segue at least to the Clinton Foundation, Steve, I don't know if you read it. I read it yesterday or today or heard it. I think I read it online. It appears that less than 10% of the monies taken in by the Clinton Foundation have gone to charity. Less than 10%. That is allegedly a charitable foundation. But less than 10%, they're pocketing the rest of the money. They're taking that money in for access. People are giving them the money. Foreign governments are giving them money. Foreign financiers are giving them money because they expect the Clinton presidency and they want access to that White House. And it is the selling of America. It is the selling of America to foreign interests because they anticipate that she will be president and the Clintons shamelessly have enriched themselves at the expense of the American public. However, having said that, Steve, I go back to I cannot believe how many people don't get this. And it deeply concerns me when I see women just out of their minds happy when she's giving a speech now, a stump speech, as she gears up and commences her campaign. I look at women who are contemporaries of mine that are in these audiences, and I ask myself, are these people comatose? or are they so locked into their own ideology that they can't question, they won't allow themselves to question what looks on its face to be irregular? I mean, how many directions right now of scandal are the Clintons in? Several. And yet, she's a viable presidential candidate. How can you have a viable presidential candidate who has so much scandalous history through her husband and now has so much on her own plate? I don't understand it. Do you?
No, I think that has been a dilemma that I've had for the last 3 years. I've heard it on numerous, you know, radio commentators made it. Bob Dole, you know, specifically made it in 1996 when he was running against Clinton. He said, where's the outrage? We seem as a society that we've lost it. I'll give a side anecdote. I was at work the other day, and Barney Frank came on, and Barney Frank is obviously the former congressman from Massachusetts who was part of the gentleman who wrote the laws for the Dodd-Frank law that regulates all banks and industries. And I made the comment that he was on TV and that he was a bit of a charlatan, and explained to him, you know, some of the stuff that he had done as a congressman, from being a homosexual to running a gay prostitute out of his house in Massachusetts when he was a congressman. And three or four people looked at me and they said, my God, how do you know all this stuff? And I looked at them and I said, you know, I said, here's the guy that's regulating your industry. How do you not know who this person is? I mean, I was dumbfounded. How do you not know who Barney Frank is from the Dodd-Frank rule, who's the principal architect of the law that regulates your entire industry? But that's where we live, and that's where we stand today. I don't get it either. And if a caller wants to illuminate us, please do so.
Yeah, by all means. And let me take a moment to plug the show. I would ask you, not just if somebody has answers to this, but if you have people or friends or whoever that either they don't know these backstories or they're hungry to hear them, drive them here. The reason Steve and I do this show, and I know I can speak for him, is because we are aware of what's going on. We do cross party lines. We don't care what your gender is. We don't care what your color is. We don't care what your political affiliation is. We're just about getting at what has integrity and what doesn't, what will make us a better nation, what will not. And we're not always right, and we're certainly open to hearing opposite opinions. I believe, as Steve does, everybody's got a little bit of wisdom. Everybody's got a contribution to make. But there are way too many places where you can go that you're not either getting crazy conspiracy theories, which we will not give you here, or you're not getting the mainstream media line. We are neither conspiracy theorists nor mainstream media people. We're just average Americans like you, trying to get at the truth and trying to cut through the deception and the manipulation that we all know takes place every single day, in every single profession, in every single aspect of our lives. We're tired of it, and we simply want to be a place where we can go and you can come to, again, sort of dust off the layer of deceit and manipulation and get at some things that can really help us. I'm going to end on just one thought. Keep it very local. You can make a difference with your local police, your local zoning boards, your local chambers. You can make a difference, but you've got to show up for those meetings and you've got to be vocal. The change will come bottom up locally. It will never come top down in our current situation. Steve, I think that's it. We're pretty much out of time. We'll be back here. Normally, we're here Monday, Thursday. This week, we were a little off schedule, but we'll be back again Thursday. That's tomorrow night. And maybe we'll even continue with this and hopefully get some of you calling in to tell us what you think. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray. Have a great night, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at abovethefraypodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/AboveTheFray Podcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.